In an alternative universe, I would live in Aachen, drink Flensburger, and drive a gold 928 automatic.
When I joined this company 7 years ago, you were talking about going to France to buy one. Just go and make it happen.
Well, hello, and welcome to another edition of the Classics World Chat Show. So it's about a million degrees here, so we will just crack on. I'm Phil Whedon, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Joe Miller.
Hello.
And Jeff Ruggles.
Hello.
So, not only is it a million degrees, but Jeff is absolutely sort of simmering right now because he's just off the back of a press deadline, and it's all a bit close to the wire, safe to say, such as the perils, but also the pleasure of putting a weekly publication together. So, Jeff, do give us a little bit of an insight into the news pages for next week's issue, the 15th of July edition of Classic Car Buyer. What have we got to look forward to?
Well, I won't give you an insight into panic, but I'll give you an insight into... I think, although perhaps not obviously a classic story, is something that's going to affect our emerging classics, our future collector cars. And that's a consultation being run by the government at the moment about emissions for Euro 5 on cars. Now, basically, they want to make sure that cars' emissions from Euro 5 on matches what it could do when it was new. There is legislation in place to ensure that all cars up to Euro 4 do that. Euro 5 came in 2009. It became mandatory in 2011. So you're looking at quite a lot of modern classics that are now entering that realm. And it just means that, emission control systems are going to have to be bang on. They're going to have to be brought up to scratch. Cars that are slightly tired or have been modified to delete DPFs, things like that, are going to be targeted. Now, there are some nuances to it, they're not saying that all modifications can't happen. They're not saying that cars that produce these emissions are all going to be fined. That's not going to happen. What they're trying to do is crack down on the proven changes that will cause emission issues, such as, getting rid of catalytic converters, things like that.
Is that going to cause issues for independent garages as well later down the line? Because if you're not on a main dealer of all the official equipment...
It's funny you should mention that, because the consultation also mentions that they're not trying to force people into using proper OE parts, not trying to do that. But the unintended consequences are yet to be seen, aren't they? So we will see. It just means, as well as sort of preserving bodywork for collector cars, you're going to have to be preserving emission systems and making sure everything is tip-top.
Unintended
consequences. It's just maybe another hurdle to these cars staying on the road. You've got very high VED for certain vehicles of this period, and now you've got another potential hurdle.
It's just that thing about not really understanding the motorist, and we're definitely sort of a breed that's slightly put at risk with these things, even though we're not...
Yeah, I mean,
really...
you have to understand why they've done it, because... We do need these cars to clean up their act as we move to this sort of emission-free world, but it is going to hurt, potentially.
I think it's a sort of lack of long-term or a lack of true understanding. So as a prime example, right, my girlfriend's got a 2012 Volvo C30 diesel. Now, being an age of that would be a Euro 5 car. So it's got CAT, it's got an EGR, it's got a DPF. And yet still, it's not allowed into the London ULEZ. And like you say, it's still going to have all eyes on it when it comes to MOT time. And with a car like that, where it's got like brand-specific code reading involved, like you say, a little independent garage isn't going to keep the software in for a 15-year-old, 20-year-old car. So a lot of cars like that might reach an age where they can't, particularly if you can't get the bits for it to make it pollute.
Well, that's another string to it, is whether you can get the bits and the cost of the bits. There are obviously noble aims of this, but it's the practicalities of it, and we'll have to see how it plays out. So there is a consultation. It's open till September, and then they're thinking of bringing the legislation in next year with a sort of 6-month lead-in. So it'll just be interesting to see how it all transpires.
Gosh, well, yeah, good. Well, good, good story to flag, I would say. In other news, I went up to Tatton Park last weekend for our Stars and Stripes event with Classic American magazine. Rather appropriate that on the 250th anniversary of American independence, the 4th of July was one of the days of the show. I'm not a great authority on American classics, safe to say. And Joe Dawes, our fellow videographer on the Fast Car channel, was up there filming with us. And he is a bit of a diehard American car fan. So he and I walked around. But I was blown away at the variety of American cars there, from sort of 1930s stuff, you know, practical sort of hot rods and custom cars, right the way up to modern Dodge Chargers, you know, and the latest generation Ford Mustangs and everything else in between. You realize
there's even big RVs and things, weren't there? And big trucks and motorhomes.
Massive Winnebagos, which I love. I love the idea of a Winnebago.
There are camperman videos coming, by the way. Some of you worked out that he has a closet camperman obsession. There will be more campervan videos in the future.
I'm not sure it's even closet anymore, is it? But yeah, it was. But it was great. I loved walking around the show, seeing all these people. It looked like a real family affair as well. Like, you know, multi-generations of enthusiasts that love all that Americana stuff. And I feel quite excited for that event. I think there's actually more potential in that event as well. My last bit of news, I must just say, because today on sale is the latest issue of Classics World magazine. Yes, we don't just do videos and podcasts, folks. We do actual papery things as well. So in addition to your weekly fix of Classic Car Buyer, you can also get your monthly fix of Classics World. And the August edition hits the UK newsstand, at least today. And rather appropriately, given the weather outside in the UK, we've got fun in the sun with convertible buys from £3,000 to £30,000. So I may nick that for a future podcast topic.
Yes,
there's some rather lovely cars in here, including a certain Mark III Cortina, which will appear on the channel in due course. But I must also flag, this is one for Jeff, look at this.
Metro Vanden Plas, for those of you listening.
Vanden Plas, it's a 1982 edition. I'll tell you what, again, I'm going to hold a picture up for those.
Is it manual or auto? Oh, it's an auto. Is it manual?
It's a manual.
That's so rare.
With the early fascia, it's absolutely resplendent. And there's a buying guide on the Rover P4, Joe, which you may have had a hand in.
I'll be honest, I wasn't involved with that one, but I will be reading it because I bloody love a P4. They're fabulous.
So the latest issue of Classics World magazine, August edition, is on sale now. You can also buy it online on our Kelsey shop, or you can, of course, subscribe. We'll put the necessary links in the descriptions accordingly. But it's probably time for our buying roundup, chaps. And I don't know why, whether it's just the fact that the cost of fuel has got so ridiculous, we might as well just not worry about it now and look at big engine beasts or big engine beauties. So cars that are at least 20 years old and they must have an engine displacement of at least 4 litres. That was kind of our criteria. Not sure I was too worried about budget, but we were to choose 3 each.
I really like this as a topic because particularly as more and more of us, I mean, cards on the table, the three of us presenting this, we do all daily drive modern cars. I mean, Phil drives an electric car, heresy that is. So we all kind of offset our environmental side of things with modern, clean, green cars. So why not have a big gas guzzler for the weekend? And that was kind of the angle we took with this. So yeah, I'm all for this because these exactly are some of the best bargains in the world of old cars at the moment.
It's on the assumption that we're going to use and enjoy these cars, but you know, sort of in selective occasions. This is not our daily driver necessarily because at £1
you don't pay me enough to use a 4 litre more than.
Although some people will tell you that the cost of the fuel is better than the cost of having to maintain a car that's not used very often. So. Well, that's something bear in mind. But anyway, Jeff, why don't you start us off, sir?
Okay,
big engine.
I'm gonna start us off with a car that I really like. Actually, you know, I generally like quite small cars, but I do like a sleeper, a Q car. So I've gone for the Mercedes 300 SEL 6.3.
Nice.
Yes. So nice. The W109 with basically a massive engine, a 6.3-litre V8 taken from the 600. Now, this car actually started off as an idea from a journalist. It was kind of one of those sort of, as so many sort of German performance cars started out as a kind of a bit of a behind-the-scenes kind of skunk work thing, but became a production model. 250 brake horsepower, 0 to 60 in 6.5 seconds in a car that was previously topped off with a six-cylinder engine. So a real beast.
Proper factory hot rod.
Yeah, exactly that. And they don't look, you know, they don't shout about their performance. They're really subtle. They're really distinguished and classy. And yet they go like stink. So, a real favorite of mine. Not cheap. You'll need quite a lot of money to buy one. But does that matter?
No, exactly. Yeah. But like you say, a very elegant and understated choice, I would say. So
yeah, that's fabulous. Oh, that's a great choice.
Very good. Go on in, Joe. Give us your next choice, please, or your first choice, I should say.
So my thing is big engine, gas guzzler type thing, you have to go to America off the back of your Stars and Stripes visit. And my favorite American car, certainly that I've driven, it's got a big engine. It's arguably the most iconic V8 of all time, is the Corvette, specifically the Corvette C5. So it's the late 90s generation. It's the first one we got in the UK officially, I think. And it is the debut of the now legendary LS V8, 5.7 litres, 350-odd horsepower in its least powerful guise, and it can go well over 400 in the kind of ZR1 specs higher up the range. It's plastic, so it doesn't weigh anything, so they go like hell. I think they look gorgeous as well. I think a Corvette is a properly distinctive thing. It can only be American. It's a proper V8 character. It's lazy. It doesn't rev out, but it's got this lovely character to it, and it's properly quick. And it was the first time that an American sports car could stand up to the likes of a Porsche 911 or a Jaguar XKR or a BMW M3, and it really could. And not to mention, because they're a bit of a niche choice in this country, i.e. it's left-hand drive, the quality's a little bit iffy because it's American, and they are quite thirsty, although supposedly you get 30 to the gallon on a run, allegedly. They're also fairly affordable. You can get into a Corvette C5 for 10 or 15,000 these days, which is a lot less than any of the contemporaries it's stacked up against, and you'll be the only person in your village with one. So yeah, I think they're properly cool, and they're something different, and actually, it goes against all the stereotypes of American cars of being a big wallowy barge, because actually they drive really well.
Yeah. No, good choice. A Corvette C5, not a Citroen C5 or indeed a Sinclair C5. But my first choice is the Bentley Turbo R.
Fabulous.
Yes. Of course, you could pick any Rolls-Royce or Bentley with the sort of 6-plus-litre V8 engine in it. The Turbo R, having had one on the fleet, I think really does epitomise that big bruiser style. You know, you can kind of cruise along and use only 10% of its potential power and torque, or you can be a bit heavy-footed with the throttle and see the speedometer rise almost as quickly as the fuel gauge drops. But it's just a lovely piece of engineering, the Turbo R, and the way that the chassis was slightly uprated to handle the turbocharged powertrain. I think it's lovely. It's the perfect amalgam of big engine brutishness and sort of British elegance as well.
Such a character.
Yeah, no, so it's very much an obvious choice for me. Anyway, all right, well, circling back round, and Jeff, what's your next one?
So my next choice is a BMW, and it's the E31 8 Series, but specifically the 850 CSI, 5.6 litre V12. So it was basically the closest the factory ever got to making the hallowed M8 that never happened. But it took the 850i, which was a bit more of a lazy cruiser, you know, quite a heavy machine, lots of power, but not so much of a focused sports car, and transformed it, really. Different suspension, that extra power, the body with the wider wheels. It was a real technical showcase. Only on sale for 4 years as well, and only around 1,500 were made, so quite a rare car. But yeah, I mean, a great example of that kind of early 90s excess, that even though we were going through a kind of global recession that meant the M8 never happened, they still built a crazy version anyway, you know, and that's what I love about it. And of course, it's stupidly quick, 380 brake horsepower, you know, 24-valve engine.
Yeah.
Goes around the Nürburgring quickly because it's got the active rear steering. Just, yeah, fabulous thing.
So I love the look of them. Absolutely brilliant. I love them.
I think the V12 version of the 850 is a bit like the V12 XJS, where it's like, if you can stretch to buying one and indeed fueling it, it's worth having the V12 because it gives it this extra layer of kind of mightiness and grandeur that is befitting of a car like that.
Yeah, I mean, as a car, the E31 was just crazy, wasn't it? I mean, it's kind of arrived as the E24's replacement, but it was completely different. It moved up to a completely different market segment. But they just look great, don't they?
Fabulous.
Just imposing, and it's got 380 horsepower and a V12. I mean, what's not to like?
Yep. Love it.
Brilliant choice. Joe, follow that, sir.
Well, actually, I've got a car that in its later years was a rival to the 8 Series.
Very good.
So I wanted to go German, but Jeff has obviously managed to trump Mercedes and BMW there. So I've gone for the car that was meant to replace the 911, but didn't. The Porsche 928. 2+2, big GT, V8, long-legged. Started out as a 4.7, then evolved to 5 litres, then evolved to 5.4 litres in the later years. I think it looks absolutely fabulous. And again, this was Porsche's technical tour de force. So it had polyurethane bumpers, it had passive rear wheel steering before that was a thing. Immense Porsche quality, but also supercar slaying performance. And I think they look gorgeous. We've done a video on one of the channel, and you can attest to the fact, Phil, they're such a fantastic all-round package. And I don't think it was ever going to replace the 911. I think it was too grand Tory for that. But that's no bad thing, because for that, they're far better, more rounded than the next JSs. They showed up how outdated the BMW 6 Series was. And the fact it was still competitive into the 90s tells you how far ahead of its game the 928 was. There's a reason why manual 928s now are a £40,000-£50,000 car, because I think they deserve it. I think they're fabulous.
Yeah. No, it's a good, they're a brilliant looking beast. They look sort of futuristic even now.
In an alternative universe, I would live in Aachen, drink Flensburger, and drive a gold 928 automatic.
Oh, fantastic.
You may have thought about this too much.
There's an image.
Have you got one of those mood boards on your wall at home with those pictures?
That's superb.
No, that's very cool. Go on then, Phil. What are you leveling up to that with?
Right. Well, I've gone a bit older this time, and I've gone with a Jensen Interceptor, slightly inspired by one I saw for sale, which I'll just hold up to the screen here.
Very nice.
It's a 1974 example for just a smidge under 60,000. Doesn't get much bigger or beautiful than that, in my opinion. But I remember driving one, and just remember thinking, this is a real statement piece, isn't it? I think it's a lovely beast. Totally out of context in the 70s during petrol crises and things like that. But yeah, fabulous nonetheless.
Iconic Auctioneers have got one in their next sale at the BRDC Classic. And I think it's belonged to the drummer of Led Zeppelin, whose name escapes me. But not a silly estimate, like 40 to 50. And it's had 83 grand spent on it.
I think that car is just a perfect combination. You've got Italian styling, American V8 built in Britain. It does not get better.
Exactly.
It's such an overindulgent car, because if you clog it, they will do single figure miles to the gallon. And yet you will be the most respected and coolest person out there, because you drive a car called an Interceptor.
By all accounts, they're a bit of a pain to restore, but there are very good specialists still around.
Yeah.
So you can get all the bits. So.
Yep.
Yeah, very wonderful cool choice.
Go on then, Jeff, your final choice.
I'm going to go for a very obscure choice here, I'm afraid, guys, because I like an obscure choice. So I'm going for a South African-only V8-powered homologation special. Okay?
Excellent. Yep.
Totally fair.
And it's the Ford Sierra XR8. So the Ford Sierra XR8 was 1984-85 kind of period in South Africa. And it had the 5-litre Windsor V8. From the Mustang. Presumably, I think it was quite hard for the South African guys to sort of source the performance engines. So they went for the Mustang unit, a standard 5-door Sierra with quite a lot of uprating and this V8 under the bonnets. Quite impressive. Only built around 250 of them. All of them were white. A couple of have been sold in the UK. I think Car Cave had one a while
back.
Yes,
remember that. Maybe
you can kind of identify it by it's got a slatted front grille and wide front arches, but it's still quite the sleeper. I just think, you know, something a bit different, isn't it? I do like a Ford, and I was kind of hunting around for a V8 that wasn't so obvious, and I landed on the XR8.
That's a brilliant choice. Brilliant choice, Jeff. I love a left field option like that.
Very left field, yes.
Still right hand drive.
Yeah, still right hand drive, absolutely.
Good enough to import and, you know, have something a bit different on the Ford show scene. I mean, so perfect.
You might be waiting a little while to find one, but, you know, something different.
I think that's very cool. There will be those of you watching and listening shouting at us that if you want a right-hand drive, foreign market V8 powered Ford that's called an XR8, you can also, of course, go to Australia and get a Falcon XR8. So many options to choose from on the XR8 front today.
Go on then, Joe, your final choice, sir.
Well, you'll probably all have seen this one coming. So it's a big V8. I think if I were you to say to me, you can have one big gas-guzzling V8 powered thing, it would be this every all day long. And it became a bit of a meme in this podcast for a while because I kept choosing it for everything, including family hatchbacks. It's the TVR Chimera, because I absolutely love the Chimera. Blackpool Bruiser, looks fabulous, built out of fiberglass. It's the Rover V8 in its best guise as far as I'm concerned. So it's 4 litres up to 5 litres. I think the power figures may be exaggerated a bit, because I don't for 1 minute believe they'd be getting 340 horsepower out of one naturally aspirated. But they go like hell because they don't weigh anything. They sound fabulous. And despite the way they look and the way they sound, they're actually a lovely thing to drive, because they're a slightly longer wheelbase than previous TVRs and they're a little bit softer sprung. They're actually incredibly forgiving. So they're a lovely thing to drive. You can cruise long or you can give it death. And either way, you'll have a fabulous time. And the fact you can still get one from sort of 7,000 or 8,000 quid, got to be one of the bargains of the century. And the only thing that stops me owning one is lack of driveway space, because I think they are wonderful cars. And I promise this will be the last time I pick the Chimera for something.
It's the last time today that Joe will mention TVR or Chimera in the same breath.
Yes, exactly. They're just such a, again, like your Bentley, they're imperfect, but they're such a character.
Yep. No, lovely.
They are a bargain, though, aren't they?
For what they get, yeah.
For what you get, they are. I mean, if you watch out for the chassis rot, but they are. They are a fabulous thing.
No, they are lovely. That whole era of TVR.
Yeah.
There's something in me that wants a Cerbera, actually, rather than a Griffith or a Chimera, just because I think something even more kind of outlandish about a Cerbera. But anyway.
I'll footnote this in very quickly. So obviously, for those of you who listened to last week's podcast, I spent last week at Snesden for the British Superbikes. And as I was coming out of the gate in the car park, there was a Chimera. Hang on, for those of you watching, that had been weirdly modified with like Cerbera-style headlights.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was quite cool. So there you go. Yeah. Even when I'm a bike racing thing, I'm not getting far away from TVRs.
No, very good. Very good. Well, what's really interesting, chaps, about my final choice is that having really confidently signed off on this, and it was probably the first car I thought of when I did my list of three, I've now come to realise that it completely ignores my own brief that I wrote down when doing this buying criteria. It has to be pre-2005 because I've actually gone with a post-2006 car.
Brilliant.
And worse. A run-out edition of that. So I've gone with the Jaguar XKRS.
You better watch the emissions.
That's not Euro 5.
I know, exactly. I think I've just always really liked them. So that's probably where I'm just quite happy to bend the rules, I suppose. But I saw one for sale. Just hold it up to camera. But it's in that lovely Italian racing red with dark alloys and no chrome. That's actually a convertible one. Yeah, 2011. It's a proper fire-breathing V8 by then, but with all the modern conveniences. And it's a little bit leery for a Jaguar. I really like them.
I don't blame you for that, because you love an X150 anyway, and that the RS is like the ultimate refined version of that. What I have to say, I've never heard a factory car so loud. There was one local to me a couple of weeks back, and it pulled away from a traffic light, gave it some welly, and I heard it for ages. They are so loud for a factory car, but the sound is like nothing else. They're amazing.
Very much so. But anyway, well, a fantastic selection of cars. There might be some big engine beauties that we've not mentioned, and viewers and listeners at home might want to get involved in the comments and let us know what cars we've missed out. You mentioned the Ford Falcon earlier, Joe. We didn't mention anything from Holden or any sort of overseas stuff that is a little bit unusual.
Yeah, it's things like the Monaro, stuff like that.
God, Monaro. Oh, how did I forget about that?
So, yeah, there's some interesting ones we perhaps didn't list that maybe we should have done. So what are we up to this weekend or in the near future? Joe, what are you up to this coming weekend?
What am I up to? Plans are a bit light, to be honest. A bit like you, when I've got things coming up, I tend to keep the weekend prior a bit dry. I will say that I drove to the office today, such as it is, 28, 30 degrees. I've driven in my W123 and windows down on a sunny day, that car's just fabulous. And I just fell right back in love with it after not driving it for a while. So might just go for a cruise in that, to be honest. My girlfriend and I have got nothing on, so we'll just waft down to the coast and get an ice cream and go out in the old Benz. But other than that, after those of you on tenterhooks for this, my bucket seats are finally fitted into the Fiat. It's only taken me 3 weeks.
Well done. You can't rush these things. What about you, Jeff?
I had a very car-themed weekend last weekend. So some friends of mine organised a mini shindig in their private orchard, which was open to the public as well. So that was really good. And during that period, I was it was about 40 minutes away, so I was able to whip home. And I took the Mini 850 City I've got, and when I got it back, I noticed there was quite a colossal oil leak. So I'll be looking into that, as well as making a trip down to North Devon as well. So
very nice.
Quite a busy weekend.
Yeah, very good. That sounds good. Well, actually, like you, because I was at Stars and Stripes last weekend, so this coming weekend it's probably going to be a little bit light on car stuff. We might go out in the Nissan El Grand camper van for the day on the Sunday if the weather's good, and use it more as a day van, a base to sort of pop the roof up and have the fridge on with some cold drinks. I'm then keeping my powder dry for the Bromley Pageant of Motoring, which is the week after on the 19th of July. Jeff, you went to it last year and it was the first time at the new venue, so I'm looking forward to going to see it in its new spiritual home of the South of England showground in Ardingly.
Really good, actually. It was good how they managed to take it from its original location in the London Borough of Bromley, I must not call it Kent, and move it there without it sort of really changing it. It was really clever, actually. And I believe they made some changes to the entry layout this year to sort of stop any queues and things like that. And it's the sole event going on that weekend at that location, I believe. So
yes,
it should be. There's a few queues last year, but they should be eradicated this time out. So yeah, it's going to be a really good show, I think.
Because Classics World's sort of a partner with it, we'll be down there. I think I'm meant to be doing something in the arena in the afternoon, maybe a bit of prize giving, so I'll be there. We've got Joe Dawes going to be filming it, because I think, Joe, you're elsewhere that weekend.
I'm elsewhere. We'll save that for next week's podcast. I bet you can't guess.
And Peter Love, who's our editor on Old Glory magazine, think old steam traction engines and things like that, he's going to be there as well. He's also a very staunch Allard fan. So I think he's got two Allards. So so he's going to be down there. Very much looking forward to that. That's on the 19th of July, and there are obviously still tickets available if you want to turn up and look at a nice variety of classic cars of all eras and styles. But I must also just give a quick shout out to one of our many Bookazine products that you can buy. Obviously, I've mentioned the Bentley Turbo R as part of our big engine beauty buying lineup. And as we also publish Rolls-Royce and Bentley Driver magazine, we created a one-off product called the Bentley Ultimate Model Guide. So if you want to tell your Turbo R apart from your Mulsanne and your T-Series and all that kind of stuff, then that's the Bookazine for you. So do go and check that out. Again, we'll put a link in so you can buy the Bentley Ultimate Model Guide. So yeah, go and check that out. We should move on to our Want of the Week, chaps.
So I was lucky enough to spend last week, majority of last week, on holiday in Croatia with my families, which was lovely. Extremely hot, probably too hot, but hey, let's not worry about that. That's a very British thing to complain about, isn't it? There's a lot of people on the Istrian coast that are on holiday from all over Europe, so you get a real mix of cars. There's people in like sort of Ferrari Californias and Maseratis mixing it with the sort of local transport, but there's still a surprising amount of Mark 1 Renault Twingos out. And I know it's nothing new to like a Mark 1 Renault Twingo. There's a big following in the UK, despite the fact it was never officially sold here. You know, and you go to something like Festival of the Unexception and you'll see two or three of them at least. But there's something about in that climate, a bright, airy car, which is very roomy inside. Most of them have sunroofs, brightly coloured interior, you know, grey, lots of space inside, but a small footprint. But there was just a charm about them. They just make you smile.
They're a happy car, aren't they?
Yeah. They are a happy car. And the most basic level, and like a yellow one with green switches and the sunroof, just felt so at home there and so happy that I find myself wanting one.
Jeff, you've been talking about Twingos for years.
I know.
But when I joined this company 7 years ago, you were talking about going to France to buy one. Just go and make it happen.
But this is what I'm getting to, right? Because in mainland, in most of Europe, they're quite expensive now because the enthusiast love for them has built up. But in Croatia and Slovenia, they're still surprisingly affordable. So I think that means I need to go back. Okay.
Coming soon to Classics World.
I think so. Joe might have to come with you and document the entire thing on video. And then you
I'm more than happy with that. I'll put up with Joe for a week if that's what
it becomes a work trip and not annual leave. So it's perfect.
Excellent. So there we are. That would be good.
All right. Go on then, Joe. What's your want of the week?
In stark contrast to Jeff's light, bright, and cheap and cheerful Twingo, I've sort of off the back of our V8 Brute or big engine Brutes theme, I decided I wanted something a bit more luxurious. I mean, you beat me to the punch on the Turbo R because that was kind of where I was going to go, to be honest. So I ended up looking one generation old. I started looking at Rolls-Royce Silver Shadows because I love a Silver Shadow. And again, I think it's one of those cars. I think it was James May said that everyone suits one. You can't not suit a Silver Shadow. And sure enough, I found one. So I'll show it to the camera. There you go. It's a 1974 Shadow 1. Very, very low mileage. I think it's under 70,000. And it's £12,900, which for the amount of car, the amount of car you get and the experience you get of a Silver Shadow, I thought that's a bit of a bargain. And I thought, yes, it's going to do 10 to the gallon. Yes, you want $4,000 or $5,000 a year put to one side to run the thing. Yes, you need a county to turn the thing around. But they're wonderful. There is nothing like a Silver Shadow. And I don't know anyone who's driven one who hasn't got out with a smile on their face. I just think they're absolutely fabulous. There's nothing like a Silver Shadow. They've got such a sense of occasion. And yeah, everyone loves them now. So I think that I would very much like one of those, please and thank you.
They've got an elegance and a timelessness all to themselves, which I think is brilliant. And like you, I think they're wonderful. So
you can't. I think everyone suits one. That's the kind of mantra I have. It doesn't matter how old you are, what gender you are, what your dress sense is like, how much money you have. I don't think anyone can not suit a Silver Shadow to a certain extent.
Yep. Now, my want of the week is a bit newer, actually. And bizarrely, it was inspired by a car I spotted in the car park at Stars and Stripes last weekend. But it isn't an American car. Ooh. It's a German car.
Okay.
And it is an Audi S4 Cabriolet.
Okay. Another big engine.
Yes. And this is a pre-owned car, so it's cheaper on the tax. It's not cheap. It's cheaper on the tax. But it's a 4.2 V8 Quattro, so it's four-wheel drive. It's a four-seat convertible. You can see I'm already doing the man maths about how to justify this back at HQ.
Yeah.
To say, this is definitely a lovely family daily driver I should have on the fleet. And I then started looking at them, and I got this 2004 model, £3,699.
That's a bit of a bargain, I think.
Make it happen.
I mean, it suddenly thought, is there a car I would trade the TT in for? And it's probably that. And I just quite like them. 22 years old. It was probably considered quite boring styling at the time, but actually it's quite timeless, isn't it? That
I think they're really classy, those Audi Cabriolets. I really like them.
So, I was much taken aback by that. And I then started looking at lots of different choices of those. There's not many online, actually, but I did see a few. So that was my want of the week.
Again, not to persuade you, but you now need to go and look up YouTube clips of them with stainless exhausts on, and then you will definitely buy one.
Yes. Well, believe it or not, my Audi TT is still off the road getting an exhaust sorted because they've had all sorts of issues finding one. But anyway, that is another story for another day. Well, look, chaps, I think that probably wraps us up for another episode. Viewers and listeners at home, thank you ever so much for all your support. Do keep following us along. If you're listening to it on a podcast platform, give us a follow, a rating, a review. Anything that helps spread the word is always appreciated. If you're watching us on YouTube, don't forget to like and subscribe. And of course, drop us a comment with your big engine beauties suggestions, or indeed what you're up to at the weekend. A car show recommendation would be much appreciated. But Jeff, Joe, thank you very much for your time. Viewers and listeners, thanks again, and we'll see you again next time. Ta-da.
Bye-bye.